Welcome to Life 2.0 Podcast. I'm John St. Augustine. Glad to have you joining me once again as we go up the down staircase in the outdoor. Try to make sense out of the senseless, and if at all possible, find the obvious buried in the absurd. Let's get to it. Glad to have you joining me once again from all over the world through the magic of technology that makes this all possible. I got to tell you, this is a really unusual show because it's the fourth time I've done it today. And that rarely happens for me. I can't even remember the last time I had four restarts. And each one of them had their own unique invitation into this world of technology that I inhabit. The first one I did about 3 hours ago. I don't know when you're going to be hearing this, but it was 3 hours before I started recording this podcast today. And it was a little later than I usually start in the morning. For the most part, I'm up before it's light out. My mind is clear. I've had a good night's sleep, got the coffee on, cats fed, good to go. Out a little bit late last night, which I'll talk about here in just a few minutes. And so I slept in a little bit longer, which kind of tilts the clock a little bit for me. Not too much, but just enough to apparently set things in a different direction. Did the first show. A little choppy here and there. A little kind of like, what's going on here? How do I get these pieces to fit? I'm working without a net, as always. And I finished the show, and I started to do some editing. And I got about a quarter of the way through. And all of a sudden, there was this straight line of static that came through from who knows where. I've never seen this before. Literally in the 4.5 years I've been doing this show, that's never happened with different equipment. I've been using this clean feed technology that delivers the program all over the world. And I record on, 2 years now? Never had seen that before. And I could literally see it on the wave pattern going, what is this? It was just this. You can hear me talking. It was just right through the whole thing. And I'd already been a little kind of off getting the show together. And I thought, well, let me just work through that. Not going to happen. So I bagged it and tagged it. Dumped that show. Stopped it in its tracks. And waited a few minutes. Cranked everything back up. And I'd already spent about 15 minutes editing on a 30-minute program. So I waited a few minutes, cranked it back up. And I'm telling you, my voice just wasn't there. My head wasn't there. The things I wanted to say were just kind of jumbled around and this, and I think, okay, well, what's going on? Well, then when I take a look back at my week, the past week that I've had with so much audio work, I think what happens is my brain needs a rest at some point. And that's a natural thing. But I'm also so used to doing the show on Saturday mornings, every Saturday morning, that it's automatic for me to get up and just get right into it. So that second time round, it wasn't working real good either. So, okay, I just shut that down. Got some more coffee, took a few deep breaths, did some stretching exercises, kind of wake up a little bit, went into the third time. And I'm not kidding, maybe 90 seconds in, it's like, stop. And I think of the times I played in sports, which are not exactly like doing this, but I've also knew there were some games I just had it and some I did not have that thing, that mojo, so to speak, to do what I needed to do on the football field or whatever it was. It's, even in the weight room, I've been pumping iron, pushing weight since I was 14 years old. I'm 63, so that's a long time. And for the most part, I bet 80%, maybe 85% of the time I go in, I just can kill. I can knock it out. I know what I'm doing in there. It feels really good. But then there's that 15, 20% where I walk in the door. I'm like, I don't care. I just don't want to do it. And usually what happens then, I'll do some light workout, and then I walk out and leave. And I remember a friend of mine who was a champion power lifter talk about, you know, the days off are as important as the days on, that recovery is really important. So my brain this past week has been spending an inordinate amount of time in audio production, which takes a lot of focus and time, energy, and effort. Also helping some people with their books that are coming along, and that's a different part of my brain, and all that's going on. So I guess I had to give myself a break, and I did. I took an hour off, and I watched James Garner in Maverick, the cowboy show from the 1960s, 50s, who knows, and something a little bit different. So this is my fourth entry into this. I just want to say in full disclosure, there are times I do not get this right, And so, but I also know that coming back to it is a good idea, or we'll see if it's actually a good idea. Because again, working without a net, there are no notes for this show. And a lot of the work that I do in audio is filled with notes. I have different time things to hit, and editing is just, it's vocal surgery, basically. So I like to freeform this a bit, and there are just a few things that float in. And I always say, I just don't want to turn the microphone on to speculate and bloviate and verbally expectorate all the time, even though that does happen. I just don't want to make it like a thing. There should be something there as a takeaway for the time that I put in to doing this and the time that you put in listening to this. And so these three pieces floated in this morning, maybe four. We'll see if they all connect or not. But last night, first off, we had an interesting experience. We went and saw Fran Lebowitz, the author and sardonic comedian who lives in New York City. She was here in Chicago at the Auditorium Theater, which is a glorious building. I think it holds about 2,000 people, 1,500, 2,000 people, completed in 1899. And by 1920, it was already, you know, up for sale. They're going to level it and smash it and bash it. Luckily, they did not do that. It is an incredible, incredible place. It was state-of-the-art when they built it in 1899. But that's on the good side of the Auditorium Theater. The not-so-good side of the Auditorium Theater is the sound. Not that we couldn't hear Ms. Lebowitz with her microphone and also the young woman who was interviewing her for the first half hour, but then they opened it up for questions from the audience. And there was probably 1,000 people there, I would guess. Easy 1,000. And it is a cavernous place. So we were on a third level, and to try and be quiet to hear somebody yell out a question, as someone who spends years in production and sound is about, you know, everything there, I couldn't believe they had just let them throw questions out in this enormous place. You couldn't hear anything. And unfortunately, Fran Lebowitz could hardly hear what they were saying. Not a good setup. I don't know whose idea that was. In theory, great idea. But let me just get this off my chest. So what you should have done is had 5 microphones, one in each aisle, in the, you know, 3 rows downstairs, and then 2 more in the rows upstairs. If you had a question, you walk to the mic, you ask your question, you walk away. Easy peasy. And they didn't do that. So I think they could have cut back a lot of time of what did they say? What did they say? What did she say? What had happened? What was going on? Which kind of takes away from the whole message that I know that Fran Lebowitz was there to deliver, which was an interesting one on its own. She's a New Yorker. She admits readily that Chicago, being the second city, is her second favorite city. She actually said there are really only 2 cities in the United States, New York and Chicago. Everybody else is just also ran. So, of course, the place erupted in a great applause for that. She loves our food here and all the things that go along with it. So that was good. And when people asked questions of her, they were more of societal bend about gay marriage and gay rights and military and politics, all kind of things like that. There were a couple of things that she said that I could hear that I thought were really interesting. And one is she talked about how so much of our society is recycled. And she didn't mean environmentally. She meant social I guess you could say political for sure, that what goes around keeps coming around again and again and again. And I could not disagree with that. I think what happens, and one of the people who asked the question I thought was surprised of her answer, was that if you're a young person, and let me just stop right there real quick, half the audience were half my age, which I found astonishing because Fran Lebowitz is 71 years old. And I thought, what are all these young people doing here? And it turns out that last year there was a Netflix documentary of sorts on her that was done by Martin Scorsese, and Netflix is in 192 countries. Well, it's a big deal. And it turns out that Fran Lebowitz doesn't have Netflix. She has a television, but doesn't have cable, doesn't have a cell phone, doesn't have a tablet, doesn't have a computer. Kind of envy that. But she had no idea how big Netflix was. And so she's going out doing these talks and all these young people are showing up because they watch Netflix on their phone. And all of a sudden, Fran Lebowitz is a thing. She's been around for years, obviously, and commenting on society. But she has a whole new audience because of Netflix. So she came out and started talking about how stuff gets recycled in our society and the world, quite frankly. And the young people were a little bit appalled by that. But of course, if you've been around a long time, you know, twice as long as they have, at least, you start to see that, well, there's a pattern here. You know, we're in an inflationary cycle now. This isn't the first time that prices have been this high. it's not the last time that prices will be this high. This isn't the first time that fuel costs what it does. It's not the last time that fuel will cost what it does. It's not the first, and it goes on and on and on. So there's all these cycles there. And she talked about what she felt was the biggest dream killer to some degree, which is student debt. And she said those are two words that shouldn't even be put together. And amen to that, sister. When I went to college, you know, I went because I was a veteran. It didn't cost a dime. The state of Illinois picked it up. But even before that, you know, it was marginal. You could afford to go to college. You didn't come out with six figures in debt. And before banks and lending institutions needed to find another source of revenue, you could go to college and earn your degree and not be buried under this staggering debt. And, you know, that's something that has been alleviated. There are places that are doing that, and there's some relief for students. But she made some really good points. But when it got to the point about, and I think somebody asked her if she thought things are getting better or worse, she said they just are what they are. And I know what she was saying. And yet, on one hand, going back to this concept that everything gets recycled and it looks like it's never been any different than it is, on a macro level, on the big picture level, that's how it looks. But on the micro level, we each have the opportunity to change within our own lifetime, to improve our own lives within the space of that lifetime. And it's not easy. I'm not saying everybody does it, but I am saying it's possible. And while sometimes we have to dig a bit to find evidence for that, it's worth the dig. So whether it's my own life, I can see how very different my life is than my parents' life and how their lives were different than their parents' lives. There are indicators that while a lot of things don't change, there is change within a lifetime if you choose to take that route. I didn't think it was a good idea for her to paint a dire picture for these people who were 22 years old. I go back to when I was 22 years old, 1982, somewhere in there. And I thought at that time, you know, I had it all figured out. That is not the case. And even though life has been very difficult at times, whose isn't? And there are people who have much more difficulty in their life than I have. There is still something inside me that wakes up every day saying today, at some point, could be better and different than yesterday was. However, if all you do is look at the news, you don't think that. So as one who's been in the media for, you know, a quarter of a century, I don't spend much time there because, as she pointed out, there's nothing really new in the news. She was talking about that in the news business, every 22 minutes in New York back in the day on radio, they would take a news break. There would be like a music station to take a news break every 22 minutes. And basically all they did was repeat the same stuff they did 22 minutes earlier, which creates a numbness to this breaking news thing. And I was thinking about how things are now when you turn on the television and the news crawl is at the bottom of the screen, all the important stuff you're supposed to focus on. I mean, you got the news people telling you what's going on in the world, most of it not real good, and then you're supposed to watch the crawl at the bottom while you're listening to this. We're not built for this. 100% convinced of that. So the more I retreat from the quote technology of the world, even though I use it to deliver this mail around the world, literally, I don't spend any time there unless I have to. Because it's detrimental to my mental health, which is something she picked up on, I thought was brilliant. This is Fran Lebowitz's take. She said, there is no such thing as mental health. Two more words that shouldn't be together. That your mental health, they don't go together because it's such a burden on us mentally. We're trying to find ways to lessen that and make it better. It's not like you can lose 10 pounds in your brain like you can on your body. And the point she was making was that, you know, over the years, this concept of digital wellness and digital well-being is a byproduct of our technological age. That 50 years ago, you didn't hear people walking around talking about mental health unless it was some, you know, difficult malady and serious mental illness. But mental health was not something people were aware of. There was no reason to have good mental health because the technology didn't push on us like it does now. So anyway, The Night with Fran Lebowitz was pretty entertaining. She has an acquired taste, no doubt. I give her credit. At 71, she has become a thing to a greater or lesser degree. She's always been in the media spotlight. This thing that came out last year with Martin Scorsese really put her on the map. She's been traveling for months doing these one-woman shows, so to speak, where she's interviewed and then takes questions. I just hope next time or wherever she's going next that they put some microphones in the frickin' auditorium. Again, as an engineer and as a production guy and as a talk radio person who knows his way around microphone and production, I'm thinking, whose idea was it to just have people yell in an enormous theater? Not good. So that went from that piece, I was thinking about all the connecting pieces that follow. So when I do this show, every now and again, I'll come across something that I think maybe you haven't seen. I don't know if you're supposed to see it or not, but that remains to be seen or heard in this case. And after I got back last night from the, I guess it's not a concert, performance, event, whatever, stayed up a little bit late just returning some emails and things like that. And I came across this headline on my Yahoo email. The tip-off should have been that it was from the entertainment page, but I got to tell you this. There's this big headline. A 4-billion-year-old comet 80 miles wide is headed towards Earth. I thought, holy shit. We got to call Bruce Willis. It's Armageddon all over again. As I read down, it goes on to say, an ancient comet believed to be over 4 billion years old is headed towards Earth. Now, the Earth is 4.5 billion years old, so stick with me on this. The massive comet is at least 80 miles across, making it twice the width of Rhode Island. It's currently speeding towards Earth at 22,000 miles per hour. I'm thinking, holy shit, when is going to be here, what, 5, 6 o'clock tomorrow morning? When is this going to happen? How come nobody's talking about this? That's the real thing that's going on in the world. It's hurtling inward from the edge of our solar system. Luckily, we won't have to worry about the comet impacting Earth. Astronomers say that we'll never pass closer than 1 billion miles from the sun. That's a little further than the distance between the Earth and Saturn. The ancient comet is expected to pass that close to Earth sometime in, drumroll please, 2031. That means we have, you know, a number of years before we even need to concern ourselves with this ancient celestial object. Still, it's always interesting to see when comets and asteroids are headed our direction. First off, I don't know why they call them hemorrhoids. They should be called asteroids. That's first. Secondly, really? This is the headline? One more time, a 4-billion-year-old comet 80 miles wide headed towards Earth? I mean, you read that and you think, you know, we're up shit creek without a you-know-what paddle. David Jewett, a professor of planetary science and astronomy at UCLA, co-authored a study on the comet. He and his fellow authors published the study in Astrophysical Journal Letters. He said that objects like this ancient comet were evicted from the solar system that we're in years ago. So it's like a cosmic boomerang coming around to kick our ass. He said the comets then took up residence in the Oort cloud. Is this not turning into Star Trek? I think it is. Which is a massive gathering of far-flung objects and comets that encircle our solar system. So they started here, they go out to the very edge of the solar system, then they come back like a boomerang, and then somebody writes a caption like that, 4-billion-year-old comet, 80 miles wide, headed towards Earth. Oh, by the way, you don't have to worry about it till 2031, and oh, by the way, it won't come any closer than a billion miles. Ugh. I got suckered into that one. And I'm trying to make a point here because what we see in the headlines really has nothing to do with the true lifelines, right? So it's not going to hit Earth. And if it does, everything's going to change anyway. So who cares? But not until 2031 at least. And if that gap between where it's at and a billion miles hits us, we're never going to know. Size of Rhode Island, twice the size of Rhode Island across. It's another thing to lose sleep over. Or not. Finally, I had an interesting interaction yesterday, let's put it that way. As many of you know on this show, John Denver, the late singer-songwriter, humanitarian, was instrumental, no pun intended, well, maybe a little bit intended, in the work that I do and the success that I've had early on. It was John's invite that put me on the stage at Windstar in 1993, and it really kick-started this being in front of people and doing what I do. And this is long before I had done a TED Talk or radio or anything like that. But he saw something in me I didn't see in myself. And for that, I'm really, really grateful. And never, I don't want to ever forget that. And any chance I get to acknowledge him with that, I do that. He doesn't need my help musically, that's for sure. The guy sold a billion zillion albums. But this other part of his life, this humanitarian work and the things that he did to improve life on planet Earth, that has moment for me. So yesterday afternoon, I got a Facebook message from my friend Pat and her husband Mark, who were traveling to see their daughter in Colorado. And as they were landing in Denver, let me just read this verbatim. "Hi, John. Mark and I just landed in Denver. It's not often that I'm moved to tears by the flight crew. They brought us to Earth with Rocky Mountain High playing and then invited everyone on board to bless someone along the way. Of course, you were right there, so I'm sending you blessings from the Rocky Mountains. Pat." Little did Pat know that not just 20 minutes before I got that message for her, I got an email. And that email I was copied on that was sent to John Denver's estate management company by my producer, off-times producer, Simsy Nichols, who was my backup person for The Bridge that I did with Beijing, China for a year. And she is the daughter of the late, great Roger the Immortal Nichols, who was an engineer for John Denver and many, many others. And so I've had in my mind to do an audio documentary on John, unlike what Martin Scorsese did with Fran Lebowitz. This is just for radio. I am not a documentarian as far as filmmaking, but I've become pretty adept at building projects out that kind of span the width and the breadth of people's lives and careers. And I did a tribute for John in 2007 for Oprah Radio. It was Peabody nominated. It was a lot of fun, a lot of work. And I didn't think I'd ever do another one. Of course, this is the 25th year since his passing in 1997. So as this year rolled around, I thought, what can I do? And I'd actually been approached a few times by some documentary people for my input as a storyboard to lay out a documentary film for John's life. And I'd looked at some stuff and gave them my thoughts. And I thought that'd be the end of it. So as this year has rolled around, I thought, what else could I do? So I'm going to expand, or at least I want to expand, on what I did in 2007, all these years later. And in order to do that, I wanted to have the blessing, so to speak, of John's estate, Annie and Zach and Anna Kate Denver and the management people that are all involved in doing what they do around his brand and name. I wanted that to be part of this. So without that, I mean, I could probably do it, but they're important to me, and I wanted to have that signed off on. So I had Simsy send the email to Zach Denver that I had created about the layout for this audio doc. And I got the email back as I was copied on it that she sent to the management company. And I just kind of felt like this is a really good step. I mean, this is a lot of work, but so what, now what kind of deal. And what I have in mind is pretty monumental as far as the people I'm talking to and the interviews that are being done and the audio we can pull from a lot of different places. And kind of putting this out there that Sirius XM, I keep saying XM, there is no XM anymore, Sirius Radio, will give a week to different artists as a celebratory thing. So the whole pitch is going to come down to this being put together to have a week for John in October with all of these pieces, that's interviews and the music and the audio and all that kind of stuff. And it put all that together and let that run. And that's kind of the, I guess I would say, the last hurrah for me doing these things, because after that, I think that's kind of it. But not just 20 minutes before Pat sent me that note, I got that email back saying, you know, stand by, we'll take a look at all that kind of stuff. And that she and Zach had talked and he was really on board with all of it. So now it goes to the management company. And so those two things kind of connecting, unlike the comet that is hurtling towards us, not really. I think sometimes when you start things and put them out there, I don't think, I know, whatever you're seeking is in fact some way, shape, or form seeking you on an energetic level. So she sends that note and I got a bit emotional. And I've been listening to the Rocky Mountain High song since I was a kid in high school. I'm always amazed at the anchor that it is for me in my life. And it reminds me of why I do this, even though it was a rough start today, that John's music and his work, especially the humanitarian stuff that came out of his I think, underlying concern for all humanity, is what drives what I do. It's just a different way. And when I listened to Fran Lebowitz last night, rightfully so, talk about the difficulties we have and how shit, what goes around comes back and forth, and we keep stirring the shit pot over and over. Those are all true. But it's also true that that can be undone within a lifetime. It's also true that you can find yourself in a new place tomorrow that you were, you know, never expected to be. And what do you do with that? It's also true that, you know, it's not what happens to you in life that matters. It's what you do about it that counts. And so much of what goes on in the world, we can do zero about. But there are things within our own reach, our own orbit, our own sphere of influence that we can do something about. Even this show, I was tempted to not do this today because I had those three starts that just were not working. And I don't even know if this one's going to work. We'll see. If you hear it, you know that I finished it. But in all of that, I think that's really what it's about. It's about taking this technology, as Fran Lee Woods, I think, accurately pointed out, that is diminishing our humanity. And how do we use it in a way that uplifts it instead? So this is my way to use this microphone and to use this platform. And hopefully when it reaches you, there's something that reminds you in there. Maybe, I don't know what it may be. And that's okay. I don't need to know. But I'm only supposed to deliver the mail on my end. If you read it or not, that's up to you. If you don't do anything with any of this, that's up to you. And that's what choice is all about. So while it looks like what goes around comes around, and it's true 99% of the time, that little 1% is where I think things change. And that's where it tilts a little bit. And maybe you get a little confirmation like I did yesterday. This is something to do. It's in the right direction. I'm always looking for the breadcrumbs. I'm always looking for the Reese's Pieces. You know, in E.T., when he's following the little Reese's Pieces things, you know, right, following home and all that stuff, I'm always looking, whenever I take on any project, for the breadcrumbs and the Reese's Pieces. Should I be going in this direction? Is this something I'm supposed to be involved in? And I look for those confirmations and those validations. And yesterday, that was a little bit of that. We'll see if I get any more of those breadcrumbs or not. Anyway, I wanted to leave you with Rocky Mountain High, a great reminder from my friend Pat and my friend John. And I hope that wherever you're at today in the world, that this finds you well. In spite of what the headlines say, make sure that you pay attention to the lifelines. Until next time, I appreciate you listening. Safe travels. Keep the faith.
He was born in the summer of his 27th year, coming home to a place he'd never been before. Left the yesterday behind him, you might say he was born again. Might say he found a key for every door. When he first came to the mountains, his life was far away. On the road, hanging by a song. But the string's already broken, and he doesn't really care. Keep changing fast, it don't last for long. The Colorado Rocky Mountain High, I've seen it rain and fire in the sky. The shadow from the starlight is softer than a lullaby. Rocky Mountain High, Rocky Mountain High. He climbed Cathedral Mountain, saw silver clouds below, saw everything as far as you can see. And they say that he got crazy once and tried to touch the sun. And he lost a friend who kept his memory. Now he walks in quiet solitude, the forests and the streams, seeking grace in every step he takes. His side has turned inside himself to try and understand the serenity of a clear blue mountain lake. Colorado, Rocky Mountain High, in rain and fire in the sky. You can talk to God, listen to the casual reply. Rocky Mountain High, Rocky Mountain High. As life is full of wonder, but his heart still knows some fear of a simple thing he cannot comprehend. Why they try to tear the mountains down, they're bringing a couple more, more people, more scars upon the land. In the Colorado Rocky Mountain High, I've seen it rain and fire in the sky. never saw an eagle fly. Rocky Mountain High. I'd see that rain and fire in the sky. Friends around a campfire, everybody's high. Rocky Mountain High. Rocky Mountain High. Rocky Mountain High.